Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thank you to everybody who helped us help the kids at St. Jude. You matter. They matter. Together, we're making it matter. St. Jude is doing incredible work fighting childhood cancer. And because of donations like yours, families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food. Help St. Jude stop childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope if you haven't. And get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. It'll look good on you. Join the doctors, researchers, and join me in the fight. And visit musicgives.org. That's musicgives.org. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. You know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
What's up? This your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
On my way out, essentially, I had one publishing company reach out to me. I was so scared to tell them I was moving to Texas. A whole year, every Monday, I would fly in, and every Wednesday, I would fly out, and they would call me, and I'd be like freaking out. I'd be like, oh God. If I answer this and they ask me where I'm at and if I can come in, I'm done.
Episode 398 with Corey Kent. His song went number one this week. It's Wild As Her. Here's a clip of that. Keep the windows down and the wind in hair. Keep her heart hanging on. Album comes out on a second. So I had met Corey Kent before. And I came in, but a lot of my Oklahoma family, like in-laws, know him. As you hear, my wife's sister went to college with him. His wife took photos at her wedding. It's a whole thing because my wife saw on the calendar. She was like, Corey Kent's coming over to the house? How's he doing? I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, is he doing good? What do you mean? She said, well, he left like to go to Nashville a long time ago. And you know, I was like, wait, huh? I was just so confused by it all. And she was like, yeah. I said, yeah, he's got the number one song. She's like, wow, good for him.
She thought he was just coming to hang out.
I don't know what she thought, but because she will, you know, try to find me sometimes because I'm not always just gone out of town, but just doing stuff. I'm like, please keep my calendar just so you can see where I am if you need to find me because it's all over the place. And yeah, she was like, Corey Kent's coming. Huh? Are you friends? How do you know? And I was like, no. Like, he's making it now. So that was a whole weird situation, positive situation. But we talk about that a little bit in this. He is from Bixby, Oklahoma. You know, the wild part of the story was he was just a kid, like 11 years old, and he starts in an old Western swing band. He talks about that. And he's just really one of those guys who, listen, he tried the Nashville approach, and that way didn't really work so much. So then he moved back to Texas and just started grinding and touring. And that kind of worked for him, mixed in with a little bit of going viral, but not really him, just like a clip of that song. A pretty interesting story. So Corey Kent is his name. I mean, he's been a hustler. He did over 100 shows in a year. He just made his Opry debut, and he's going out with Jason Aldean next on his Highway Desperado tour. And I thought he was pretty open about he's going to make less money doing that than doing his own shows because he's selling his own shows and selling them out and selling a bunch of tickets. But it's an investment to go out on these big high-profile tours, and he's very grateful for it. But he's like, yeah, it's an investment season. So it's Corey Kent. What'd you take away from this interview, Mike?
I think when it comes to new artists, sometimes you wonder how they're going to be when they come in. Really nice guy. And he also knows that, like, he's having a moment right now. He's going to take that in, but keep working, keep grinding.
Yeah, it was really nice. I guess when I see the motorcycle and...
Yeah, he looks really hardcore.
Except with a baby face at the same time. Like, but it's all legitimate.
Yeah.
Like, he, like, worked on motorcycles, like, as a job for a little bit, too, I think. He did the asphalt and did the motorcycles. So, Corey Kent, I do believe that this guy is like legitimately who he portrays, which is cool. He doesn't even live in Nashville. I didn't find that out till later on. He's playing in Nashville, the Brooklyn Bowl. What, 6-2, January, February, March, April, May, June. Oh, June 2nd. Is that album day for him?
Yeah.
Oh. Do you do fingers for months?
No. Oh. I can remember him.
Nah, not me. He's playing the Brooklyn Bowl in Nashville on June 2nd. On June 8th, he's playing the Chevy Riverfront stage at CMA Fest. And his name is Corey Kent. There's a story inside of this I don't even want to tease, but it's one of the best stories I think that's ever been told on the Bobbycast.
Great.
I don't have to tell you what it is, right? You know what it is?
I know exactly.
It's one of the best stories that's ever been told, and one of the most holy crap stories that's ever been told on the history of the Bobbycast. And we're almost 400 episodes in. So take it in. Follow him on Instagram at Corey Kent and TikTok, same. Let's go. Here he is, Corey Kent.
Corey, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, I have a lot of stories that involve you.
Uh-oh.
Even as of yesterday, I was flying back. You can fix that.
Yeah. All right.
Wait.
Yeah, no, we're good.
We were flying back from Austin, and I was with Steve Hodges. And you come up because my wife, which is another story, and Steve's like, oh, you ever met Corey? I said, no, I never met Corey. And he's like, man, he's the greatest. And then I said, yeah, I've heard the opposite. But no, I haven't, But he said that, I guess your song just went number one the night before.
Yeah, man.
And that were you celebrating? Was he with you? He wasn't with you, he was with me.
No, he was, so my manager was at the iHeart thing.
Okay.
And I think he went and
maybe they were celebrating then for you.
Yes,
they got it.
They got some champagne and, you know, did the thing.
Well, that's what he was talking about. He's like, we just celebrated for Corey. And I was like, he's not here. We celebrate his honor.
And I was on the road, which is where we are almost 100% of the time.
But, yeah,
I was celebrating from my red van Rooster at, you know, 1 a.m. whenever it was official, or midnight.
You get to be in the fun part of your career now where you've worked so hard to even work freaking harder. Because when you first get that success,
no doubt, man.
That's when it's time that and I tell this to a lot of artists. I'm not going to say new artists, but a lot of artists who are experiencing commercial success for the first time.
Right.
Because it gets really tiring. We were just talking before you walked in, all of us here. Like, I spent 5 or 6 days on the road doing the radio show, doing ACMs, I'm just exhausted. But I have to remind myself sometimes, man, it's awesome. I get to be exhausted.
No doubt.
So congratulations on being exhausted.
Thank you, man. Well, and honestly, it's more exhausting when I get home. You know, we got three kids at the house. So, like, leaving the night our song went number one, I got back in the van and we drove from 2 a.m. to 8 a.m., to get home for Mother's Day, and then just had a whole day of, you know, like when you get home and it's Mother's Day, it's like give mom a break day.
Right.
So I'm basically like hallucinating for 24
hours. Who drove?
Hours.
The 2 to 8 period is it's the worst time period have to do anything because it ruins the whole rest of the day.
Yep.
So who drove the van?
So me and our TM Bo, we're the only ones in the van.
Oh, no.
So it was us, you know, and you can't just let one guy go the 2 a.m. to 8 a.m. thing, because if he starts dozing off, like you're both goners.
Someone's got to run watch. Someone's got to run drive.
Got to have the co-pilot / DJ, you know. So it was both of us. We did pull over like, you know, 3:45 and catch an hour because we just were seeing weird things on the side of the road.
Catch that hour, I feel worse. I catch the hour and I'm like, oh God, I can't go on.
Yeah.
Congratulations though, man.
Thank you.
Number one song. Mike, could you have a little bit of it?
Yeah.
A little bit of Wild Is There? I keep the windows down and the wind in her hair. Keep her heart hanging all around every turn. So I think your wife took pictures at my wife's sister's wedding.
Yeah. She did. And so we went to Oklahoma State.
With Grace.
With Grace, yeah. And I don't know Grace, but for the record. I think maybe
you're really missing out because Grace is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's what my wife told me all about. Well, both of them. I mean, she got back from this wedding and was like, these people are so fun. Like, what an awesome family. And she was like, Bobby Bones was there and Grace's sister is married to Bobby. And I was like, oh, great. So you told him about me, right? She's like,
I can tell you, no. Nothing got slid. No CDs, nothing. That's funny.
I was like, Well, what are we doing here? You have a golden opportunity to help. I mean, nothing. And that's she's funny. Like, no, I just, she's so funny like that. Like one time she ran into Dennis Quaid in the airport, physically ran into him, made him drop all of his stuff. And she's like holding one of our babies. And she comes back to me, like we split up to go through TSA, come back together. She's like, I just ran into somebody. I'm like, who? She's like, I don't know, but I should know him. And I was like, okay, well, do you know, like, what is he, music, actor? Like, what is he? She's definitely in movies, like movies we watch all the time. I'm like, okay, you have anything for me? No, nothing. Walks by and she's like, that's him. That's him. And I was like, Dennis Quaid? You don't know who Dennis Quaid is. And then, you know, just, she just doesn't, not that she doesn't care. It just doesn't. I admire this about her. Like she just, everybody, every person is a person to her.
Yeah. It's not a priority really cool. That he's a Dennis Quaid.
No. And yeah. Same thing. Like we were watching the Super Bowl one year and she's like, who's that guy? And the confetti's falling. I'm like, Tom Brady. She's like, oh yeah, he's married to Giselle. Right. I'm like, that's how you know who Tom Brady is? You didn't know what he looked like? Nothing. Okay.
How long you been married?
Coming up on 7 years.
You look like you're about, I don't know, 21. Well, one of those young teenage Oklahoma weddings or what?
I guess, man. We met at Oklahoma State and we met our freshman year, but we were just friends for a long time. And then it just, over time, it was like everybody knew what we didn't know. They were like, so you guys are dating? We're like, no, we're just friends. We were definitely more than friends, but it was just one of those things that took a little longer to develop. And then when it did develop, it happened really fast. So we like got engaged. 89 days later, we were married. And like a few months in, we were pregnant. So it was just like, all right, well, we're having kids. Might as well knock them out, you know? So we have three now.
Might as well. Why not? Right? Why what not? Else is there to do?
What
might
else?
Well. So you don't do the whole somebody else boomer. Because this everywhere
I
go.
I don't do that.
Oh, my God. It's the worst. Everywhere I go, my wife, she will see somebody or they will see her. And if there's any OU paraphernalia, boomer, suited, it's like, oh my God.
No.
Like we have a chant that people think are annoying, me being Razorback, but we kind of keep it into games for the most part or like events. I'm just at the movie.
You can read the room.
Yeah,
is what
boomer.
Yeah.
We're literally watching Air, the movie in the theater. And they got to yell that their mating call to each other. Where did you grow up in Oklahoma?
Bixby, which is Tulsa.
I've been to Bixby.
Why?
I don't know. Well, Caitlin's from Fort Gibson.
Yeah.
And I think I've just been at, maybe Bixby's where Grace got married. Is that where?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. It's actually, the town has really changed in the last few years.
Is it a 5A school?
I think it's 6A now.
You're right. It's 6A. It is Bixby, and it's where I was. That's exactly what I was told. I've been there. Shout out. I probably went to your house.
You could have. Right. My house was not someplace you'd visit where I grew up. But anyway, that town is, yeah, I don't get to go back hardly ever.
Is anyone there?
What do you mean?
From your family?
Yeah, my mom still lives there. My mom and have a little brother and little sister that are in high school there. So
it's a 6A school. That's a big school. What was your graduating class?
200, a little over 200. And now it's like, I think my brother will graduate with like 800 or something. So it is.
Yeah, it's big.
It is like quadrupled in the last few years. I guess wedding venues are there now. That it used to be, the joke was like when people come play us in football, like they're going to Hixby because you got to drive through the cornfields and the trailer parks. Not joking. Like the downtown area is like low income housing and trailer parks, and then you get to the high school, and so all these like city teams would come play Bixby and just
they called it Hixby.
Make fun of us. Yeah.
So you moved to Nashville, how old?
17. Yeah.
That seems pretty young.
Yeah.
Did you finish high school?
I did, a year early so I could move here and write. I wanted to learn how to write songs. I wasn't currently really doing it, but I knew that I could get here and learn from some people. So I played Western Swing as a kid, which is like—
Talk about what that is.
1930s era Dust Bowl kind of music. The whole genre kind of existed to lift people's spirits during like a really tough
like
time.
And Depression-ish
yeah,
time?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like Dust Bowl era where like no crops were growing. They could barely feed their families. And Bob Wills was kind of the guy that made it famous where I'm from, like Texas and Oklahoma. There's other pockets of Western Swing guys that were, you know, pretty popular in California. So there's multiple cultures, but I grew up playing this stuff, not because I like loved the music, but because two Hall of Famers saw that I could sing and play. And they were like, hey, do you want to make money to play music? And I was 11. I was like, you can do that? I didn't know that was an option.
You were playing at 11?
My first show, my first legitimate show, was at Kane's Ballroom in front of Asleep at the Wheel and the Texas Playboys, which was Bob Wills' band. And it was sold out, like 2,000 people. And it was, I didn't even realize the magnitude of it at the time. It was just like, we get to go do this thing. We get like $100 and we get off the stage. And then our parents drive us home. It was super wild and far-fetched.
Well, let's back up. I want to get to the end of the story, though, but let's go back. How old were you when you started playing music, and who influenced you to even know that you could get a guitar and play music?
When I was a kid, I remember seeing like my earliest TV memory was Garth live in Dublin. I just remember like being enamored with this guy that could like control this sea of people across the world, and they all knew his songs, and he's like in this crazy shirt running from side to side on the stage. So that was like my first country music memory. But my mom, she can sing. She's probably the only musical person in my family.
So nobody was a music teacher, played in a band, like growing up. So you really saw something and were just drawn to it.
Yeah. I mean, my mom was really good about like helping me just try all of the activities to kind of find my thing. I did all the sports, but I was never like a standout athlete. I was pretty good at wrestling, but never, I mean, Oklahoma's like a big wrestling state. So you put me in another state, I might've been pretty good, but Oklahoma, I was just right. Subpar. So
Oklahoma State's got a really good program.
Yeah.
Did you wrestle there?
No.
Oh, okay.
All my buddies did. They were a little better than I was. Thank God, dude. I mean, I wouldn't be able to fit an in-ear monitor in my ear if I wrestled at Oklahoma State, you know? So, but yeah, I think just my parents kind of giving me the encouragement to just keep trying new things until I found something that stuck, you know? And music, guitar specifically, I was super anti-theory. Like to this day, can't read music, really don't have an interest in it. Tried it, seems complex, but I wanted to learn how to play songs, not play scales. So I finally found a teacher after quitting like 20 different teachers that would just teach me the three songs that I wanted to learn. And as soon as I learned those three songs, I was like, all right, I'm ready to go play. I'm going to go play a show. And so I begged this band that used to play. My mom had like a women's clothing store in Tulsa. And she had parking lot parties at this thing and would hire this band. And this band was playing at the state fair. And so I begged them to let me play during their like break. And I just figured, you know what? It's the fair. Nobody stays long enough to listen to more than three songs anyway. So I played the three songs over and over and over. And while I was there, that's where I crossed paths with these Western Swing Hall of Famers that were like, hey, you should, you know, give this frontman thing a try for this band. It was a 9-piece band, 11 to 15 was the age range. And it was just supposed to be for that one show at Kane's Ballroom. And it ended up being like a novelty thing that nobody had seen before. So we got to play all over the country. Got to play at the Kennedy Center in D.C., opened for the Oak Ridge Boys, and got stage time with Roy Clark. And, I mean, just legends. And got to learn and talk with them and just get all the advice that we could. And then when I was 16, I had like this chance encounter with Willie Nelson that sent me down the songwriting rabbit hole that made me move to Nashville. And, you know. It's led to everything, but that was the pinnacle moment, the defining moment of like, all right, I'm going to learn how to write songs.
What's the Willie encounter?
So I just got my driver's license, I was 16, and the band had broken up. Not because of anything else other than I was the youngest in the band and everybody was going to college. So everybody's going different directions. It's like, this isn't going to work. And, essentially, I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to go back to wrestling and playing sports and being a normal kid, because 5 years into a band, even though we didn't really get all that far, I knew how hard it was to get any momentum going. I was like, that seemed like a lot of work. I'm probably out on that. And then my grandfather and my uncle were coming to town from Broken Bow, which is where they live, southeast Oklahoma. They were coming to town for the Willie concert because my grandpa's like the biggest Willie Nelson fan. And they've got tickets, and they stop by the house, and they're like, man, you should really, you know, like, you should really go see Willie. He's in his late 70s at this point, I think, and maybe early 80s. But anyways, they were like, you never know how long this guy's going to be touring, right? You should go. I was like, well, I don't really have the money. I'm 16. Every dollar I have goes to gas. And they were like, well, just show up at the show, and after it starts, you know, you can pick up a cheap ticket. So that's what I did. I drove down to, he's playing at the Spirit Bank Event Center, which I don't even think exists anymore. And I bought a cheap ticket after the concert started from somebody that was scalping tickets. And I walked in, and the context of this is like, up to this point in my life, every concert I ever went to, I was like tortured by the thought of like, that should be me. I should be up there. And I think because of that, I was always thinking, what would I do if that happened? Like, would I be prepared for that moment? And this night just felt like different. I've always had that thought, but never, you know, never wound up on a stage. And this particular night, I was like, man, something feels like that could happen. I don't know what it is about tonight, but I went to the concession stand and like asked this sweet old lady that was working there. I was like, can you find me some cardboard and a marker? And we made it happen. I wrote a sign. It said, it's my dream to play a song with you. And I'm up in the nosebleeds.
No way.
No, not kidding you. Wrote this sign out. I'm in the nosebleeds. The story gets better. I haven't really been able to tell the full story.
We got all the room and time. Go ahead.
So the full story is, the short story is, I end up close enough to hold the sign up and Willie sees it. The long story is, my uncle calls me and is like, hey, did you get a ticket? I'm like, yeah, I'm up in the nosebleeds. Like, Willie Nelson is an ant. I can't see him, but I can hear him. And he's like, okay, well, you have to have like this wristband to get down on the floor, but I'll swap seats with you. I can't give you my wristband, but if you walk down here, he's like, honestly, your grandpa's hammered and I need a break. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, done. You know, like, if you know anything about my grandpa, Maker's Mark and Willie Nelson, like, that's the dream team. Okay. So he's feeling pretty good. Like, at this point, I think he's like eyes closed, just listening, you know, vibing to Willie. And so I walk down there and I just walk past security, like, fast enough that they don't ask for a wristband, go sit down there with my sign. And they're like third row, like, their seats were good, 'cause this was like a birthday present or something for my grandpa. And, I just sitting there and he's vibing out and I'm like, I'm going to hold this sign up. So I hold the sign up and Willie leans over, takes the bandana off his head, throws it at me, like, pretty much saying, hey, I see you, but put the sign down. So I took the bandana and I put it in my pocket and then I held the sign back up and he comes over there again and throws me another bandana, like, for real, dude, you got to put the sign down. Thanks for coming. And I took the bandana and I can feel the tension behind me at this point. You know, I'm blocking very expensive seats with this sign. And so I turn around to the guy behind me. And I'm like, I'm sorry, dude. I got to do this. I hold the sign back up again. And then Willie finally leans over and he's like, all right, kid, what do you want to sing? And I was like, because of that moment that I always had in all these shows that I was like tormented by, of like, that should be me. What would I do? I was like, instantly, I was like, Milk Cow Blues. And he was like, why does this kid know a 1930s Dust Bowl Western swing song? And is honestly, because I knew nobody at that concert wanted to see Corey sing Blue Eyes Crying in the Rain. They wanted to see Willie sing that. And that's not a realistic expectation to have. So I was like, I'm going to play a song that I know that Willie knows, that I've seen him cover before, that he loves, that's not his. And the band's going to know because it's a standard. And so he goes, well, get up here. And dude, the next, you know, 10 minutes is a complete blur. I ended up walking past security. The song's already started. Like, the band started the song and I'm like running up trying to get to the mic in time. And I walk up to the mic and he goes, "What's your name?" I was like, "Corey." And he goes, "This is Corey, everybody." And the crowd's like, ah. Like, the first thought crosses my mind is like, nobody is going to believe this. Like, my uncle is on his way to the nosebleeds, like, not paying attention. My grandpa has had a lot of makers, and he's kind of a storyteller anyway. So I'm like, nobody's going to believe him. And nobody my age, nobody from high school is at this Willie Nelson show. Like, and this is before everybody has iPhones. So I'm like, nobody's going to believe this. And so I walk up to the mic, and Willie looks over at me, and he's like standing really close to the mic. Just, I think if I'm reading it properly, like, if this kid just completely freezes up, I have to take over. So he's right by his mic, and I walk up and I start singing the first few words, and he's like, I'll never forget this moment, dude. He just gives me the biggest ear-to-ear grin and backs off the mic and nods and just like
just plays
and lets me sing the whole song. And at one point, you know, I really don't feel that old, but I definitely am going to like date myself with Gen Z right now. I definitely took out a flip phone and tried to take a picture because I was like, nobody's going to believe this. And I was shaking so bad that the picture, you can't even tell who's in the picture. And I walked, that was in the like solo section instrumental. I walked back to the, up to the mic, finished the song, and Lucas Nelson was his guitar player on that tour. So I got to meet Lucas, got to meet Mickey, got to, you know, talk with Willie for a second. It was magical. And I just remember walking off stage going, okay, like if I needed a sign, this was it. Like, I'm writing songs, I'm getting back into music. And probably the wildest moment about this whole thing is that when I make my way back to my seat, I sit down in my uncle's seat, really. I sit down and the guy behind me taps me on the shoulders, and I'm like, oh God, this guy's going to lay into me. And he goes, hey, if you don't hold the sign up again, I'll send you the video that I just took.
Oh, come on.
And I was like, oh my God, no freaking way. And so he's like the only dude in the whole crowd that got footage of this. And it's the only video that exists. It's on YouTube. And it's super blurry because I think it was like a handheld camera or something, like a cam. It was not an iPhone. But it was, that was such a cool, like, full circle moment of, you know, the guy that I totally have been pissing off for the last hour.
That is a crazy story.
And here's a clip from that performance back in the day.
We interrupt this interview to bring you a message from our sponsor.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Want to say thanks for everybody who has helped with St. Jude. I mean, you guys are changing lives. You guys are saving lives. St. Jude has been leading the way to the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of cancer. And I'm talking about childhood cancer. Your support actually means that families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food. So the parents can focus on being a parent and helping their kid live. You know, I never had cancer, but I was in the hospital as a kid for a long time. And I just remember how difficult it was, how scary it was. And then I remember getting out and having to figure out how to pay the bill. I didn't have to pay it, but, you know, somebody did. But St. Jude eliminates a lot of that. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in Hope. You'll get an awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. Join the doctors, the researchers. Hey, join me in this fight and visit musicgives.org. That's musicgives.org. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter The Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
And we're back on the Bobbycast.
And then so I graduated a year early from high school because I wanted to go to Nashville. So I moved.
Purposefully, did you cram hours?
Yep.
So you could leave?
I took dual credit at the local college. So it was knocking out my high school stuff, but it was also kind of giving me a jump start at college. But that was because I was going to take a whole year to go do the songwriting thing. So my senior year of high school was spent crashing in my truck and sleeping on friends' couches in Nashville.
I was going to ask, if you're 17 and you move here, I mean, you're not even an adult. So when your parents are like, two thumbs up, go ahead, hit it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Did they push back at all? Did your mom push back at all?
Not really, man. You know, I think they had been exposed to the world, the music world. Because, I mean, they'd been, honestly, it was probably more like, thank God you have keys because we've been driving your butt to all these shows for the last 6 years. Never again will I take you to a show. Here's your keys. Like, I was already making trips at 16 to Atlanta, Georgia, to play at Eddie's Attic because that was the only spot outside of Oklahoma that would give me a chance to play anywhere. There was a guy named Andy Hingley there who's now like the Live Nation guy in the Southeast. He runs everything down there. But at the time, he was booking Eddie's Attic, and he chance encounter saw me play somewhere and was like, hey, you're in Oklahoma, but I'll give you $100 and I'll put you on sold out shows, on the front of sold out shows, and you can come play and you can stay on my couch. So I was already back and forth to Atlanta every chance I got. So they knew that I could drive there safely and back. But yeah, I think they knew they could probably try to stop me, but it wasn't going to work. You know?
What'd you do when you got here? Because, I mean, did you have a system of friends at all that also wrote? And
no, I knew one person. I knew nobody that lived in Nashville. I knew the Halseys, which Jim and Sherman Halsey, who managed the Oak Ridge Boys and Roy Clark and a lot of the acts that we got to open for. I had met them through that. And they brought me out here one time and introduced me to one person, really, that helped me make my connections. And he probably, like, if you were to ask him about this, he probably doesn't remember this. But his name is Daniel Lee, and I have no idea where he is now. I know he's still in the music industry. But he was at a place called 1010 Publishing at the time. And they brought me in, they introduced me to Daniel, and he was like, well, what do you want to do? I was a 16-year-old kid. I knew nothing about the music industry outside of just how to play a show. And I was like, well, I want to learn how to write songs. And he goes, okay, I run a full-on publishing company. I need to put my guys with guys that are good at writing songs. Otherwise, it's a waste of their time. But here's a list. I'm going to print you off a list of 10 writers that don't have publishing deals that I think are good. And here's their info. And he gave me a print-off and cell phone numbers of 10 writers that he thought were good. And I cold called every one of them and was like, I'm this new dude from Oklahoma. I've written 3 songs, but Daniel says you're good and I'd love to write a song. And a couple of those guys, like, songs have made my records, or they're, you know, like Josh Matheny was on that list, and he's, you know, he's like a crazy talented ACM of the Year nominee for, I don't know, instrumentalist, I think. Anyways, I don't know what he is, but he's a great, great musician, great songwriter. Josh Dorr was on that list. And from there, I just kind of made friends, and then their friends became my friends. And I've crashed on all those guys' couches. And Josh Dorr's roommate was Jordan Davis at the time. So I'm like over at Josh's house. And then I met Jordan Davis. And then I was like, do you want to write? And he was like, sure. So then we wrote a few songs. And then that was like the first time I saw a guy from, you know, the early days that like blew up. I was like, oh my gosh, that's the same guy, you know. And we're friends now, but just cold called people, and one write turned into five, and by the end of the year I was writing like every day and working my way up.
You don't live here?
No.
I was just in Frisco for ACMs. That's where you live?
That's where I live.
I like Frisco.
It's a good spot, you know?
Yeah, why Frisco?
So in 2019, I got dropped from my pub deal in Nashville, and my wife and I were living here. We had our first baby, and we were just kind of like, you know what? The only thing that was keeping us here is gone. And we had our first little girl, and we had another on the way. We're like, we want to raise our kids around family if we can. And there's nothing holding us back from doing that now. So we decided on DFW area and, moved back and just kind of prioritized our family. And I was like, man, at the time, like the year spent in Nashville, I had nothing to show for it. Like I didn't have any big cuts. I was kind of waiting for the magic song to like change my life, and it just never happened. So I was like, man, you know what? At least back where we're from, you can just go build it the old school way. You just go play the honky tonks and get a van and a trailer and you go do the thing. So I was like, that seems more suited for my skill set than anything else. So let's, you know, move out there, work twice as hard at music. And she's just kind of from that area. So that's why we chose that area. And it's just a couple hours away from my folks up in Oklahoma. So it just seemed like a good, happy medium. And then we basically, everybody in Nashville was like, hey, that's a horrible idea. If you want a music career, probably shouldn't leave Music City. And we were like, yeah, but it's not working here. We'll just work twice as hard on the road from Texas and, you know, let God figure out the rest. And so we moved. And then right about that time is the time the whole world shut down. So it was a horrible time to move and be out of work with two kids, and music's not a thing. So
have you found yourself, I guess maybe you're not having to do that, because you have, I mean, you're all on a record label. But how did that come about? Because you're on a big record label.
Yeah. Dude, it's a long and winding road to right here. The 30,000-foot view is when I got to Texas, the world shut down, and I had to figure out something else because couldn't, you know, pay the bills, have a wife and two kids, and now I think at this point I got a third on the way. And it was like file for unemployment or learn how to do something new. Those were the two options. And so I went to work for a pavement company in Dallas, Texas, and didn't really think much of it. It wasn't like now I'm not a musician. It was like there are no musicians right now.
Right.
It's not a thing. You can't go play live music. So I just put my head down, went to work, and I started playing at this Mexican restaurant right down the road from our house because it was the only place that I knew of that would allow live music. So I was just doing it because I had to, like, for my soul. And just kind of keeping the rust off that way. And I think I was so motivated by the time that, you know, luckily I lived in Texas. Texas was kind of like the first place to go, all right, we're going back to normal. We're going to try this. And so honky tonks and local bars and stuff started opening up one by one and doing like seated shows. And I got my first opportunity at a real show to go open for Flatland Cavalry in like January of 21. And I just remember thinking, okay, the world just gave us like a caution lap in NASCAR. Like, I'm not even a NASCAR fan. This is the best analogy I could think of. I do love NASCAR, but I'm not like a diehard But I know what a caution lap is. You know what a caution lap is?
I do, and I don't follow NASCAR at all. But okay. I get the analogy.
Okay, so I feel like the whole world, like there was a crazy wreck, and everybody slowed down to the same pace, and then this pace car is out there, and then eventually that pace car leaves the track, and it's like, may the best man win. Like, the playing fields are kind of even again, right? The people that had these big leads, they had to start from ground zero again too, seemingly. And I just remember going, I'm going to take full advantage of the caution lap. Like, I will not be out hustled from this moment on. And Texas gave me the ability to start building again. Like, I started playing as much as I could, and eventually my shows outweighed. I was having to take off work at the pavement company to go play shows, and that was kind of the tipping point. While I'm still working at the pavement company, I recorded Wild as Her. I was just taking every opportunity I could to keep building back, because I wanted to get back to music so badly, and it was such a far-fetched thing that every opportunity I got, I took for a whole year, lost so much money, you know, just paying the band and playing $150 opening slots for a whole year, played 105 shows that year. And in January of 21, we got one show. So we played the first 2 or 3 months, we got maybe 10 shows total. So the last 9 months of the year, we played 90 plus shows and just hustled, and it built into this thing. And Wild as Her started growing, and I might have my timeline off on that. We had recorded it, but we hadn't released it. But our live show started growing. Then by the time we released Wild as Her, we were like, I don't know, 8 singles in of consistently releasing music, like every 6 to 8 weeks. And it just popped. Like, a couple weeks into being out, my manager called me and was like, hey, you're having
like
a
streams,
moment.
Like streams?
Yes. Yeah. You're having a moment. And I was like, how? And he said, you're not a video, like you, not a video or something on your socials, but the song itself has just gone viral. Like, everybody's making videos to it. It's a thing. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then he showed me the streaming numbers, and it was like 10 times bigger than everything we'd done. And then we just kept building it on the road. And, you know, that's what we do. We're live musicians. So I think the culmination of, like, we essentially were a live act, like an old school build it on the road act that had a viral moment, which doesn't really happen. Usually it's like you got viral moments from viral acts.
And you didn't even know you had a viral moment until someone called to tell you you had a viral moment.
Yes. Yeah, it was hard to believe. And then we started seeing, you know, everybody knowing every word to the song at all of these shows that we were playing.
Could you notice more people coming to shows just organically, or was there growth, but you just thought, hey, we're moving, we're gathering fans because we're pretty good now?
Yeah, it felt more like that. It wasn't an overnight, like, oh shoot, this is where we've arrived. It wasn't that. It was actually kind of a, like, when we put the song out, there wasn't much of an initial reaction. It was like a few months into the song being out that it just took off. And then we started to see, you know, ticket numbers are starting to move. But what was cool about that moment is we already had 2 records out. So it was like, who's this new guy? Oh, we have 20 something songs we can go dive into. So then the live shows, people were showing up for one song, but they also knew 7 other songs from a band that's brand new. So it just grew really quick. It wasn't like people were standing around waiting on one song, which happens a lot with new acts that have their first thing. For us, it was like people are singing along with us like a majority of the set, and then we get to the last song and they're just losing their minds, and everybody's posting about it, and now people got FOMO. So the next town we roll into, it starts to sell quick, and just a big snowball at that point.
Can you trace back what actually happened with that song? Like, do you know the first person who posted it in a big video? Do you know? Because there's always some sort of genesis, lucky moment where somebody likes it and shares it somewhere, and then before you know it, other people go, that is a good song. Could you trace it back?
So I know that we were, like, I went to school for business. Like, I enjoy that side of the music business. And, like, I owned a merchandising company, so when we were at the shows, like, my company's printing the t-shirts, and we're looking at everything like a like a business, right? And so we've tried a bunch of different marketing plans at this point. And we didn't have a booking agent playing, you know, 100 plus shows a year. We did just get a manager who was really helping me, who was like the mastermind behind all the social media stuff. And he was like, well, you know, how do you feel about TikTok and all this stuff? And I was like, man, if I could just play music, that's what I would do. And I know a lot of artists feel that way. And he's like, okay, so we have to find a way to use this that's authentic to you. And I was like, well, what if we have other people who are naturally like really good at this promote our song for us instead of me trying to promote our song? And so we started down that road, and every release of those 8-10 songs, whatever, leading up to Wild Is Her, we were constantly just tweaking the knobs on social media. Like, we started hiring, I call it like guerrilla warfare of social media. We started hiring like individuals, I think probably before that was popular. Like, we were seeing it in other spaces, but not necessarily in country music. Like, you know, people were hiring bloggers for their clothing lines, but nobody was like, hey, social media guy, you know, sing this, do something to this song. And so we started there of like, let's get this guy that seems like they have some fan overlap. Their fans probably like country music. Let's try them. Well, initially it started out like, let's try to give them an idea to do something on their video. And that backfired. It was like, when we would try to create something that we thought would work, it wouldn't work. But then when by Wild Is Her, we were like, hey, we're going to hire you we're going to throw you a little money, and we want you to do whatever you want with the song. And that was like the magic recipe. Like, they were doing stuff that was on brand for them and their, and their following. And it wasn't me doing a TikTok dance that I sucked at. And that like feeling like way out of my realm. I never had to do any of that. I never had to like be a look at me personality. It was like, let's let the people that are naturally like that do their thing, and let's let them use the song. And we hired a handful of people, but what was, I think the domino that fell was that people felt the freedom to do whatever they wanted, and it made other people want to do whatever they wanted. And it just became the sound to all of these different videos that had really no theme. It was just like a sound that became a trend, which was cool. Cause like for us, again, we're just a live band rolling around in a red van that we call Rooster, playing Oklahoma and Texas. And now our song is like one of the most viral songs on the internet. And when people were like, I wonder who that guy is, they got two records to go find.
Right.
So it's kind of this perfect storm of events, but I don't really know if there was one person in particular as much as it was just like a theme of people are using the song and making whatever they want that's authentic to them, which is like the culmination of everything for us is like authenticity. If you don't believe it, then you're not going to share it.
Let's take a quick pause for a message from our sponsor.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
tecovas.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Want to say thanks for everybody who has helped with St. Jude. I mean, you guys are changing lives. You guys are saving lives. St. Jude has been leading the way to the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of cancer. And I'm talking about childhood cancer. Your support actually means that families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food. So the parents can focus on being a parent and helping their kid live. You know, I never had cancer, but I was in the hospital as a kid for a long time. And I just remember how difficult it was, how scary it was. And then I remember getting out and having to figure out how to pay the bill. I didn't have to pay it, but, you know, somebody did. But St. Jude eliminates a lot of that. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in Hope. You'll get an awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. Join the doctors, the researchers, and join me in this fight. And visit musicgives.org. That's musicgives.org. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Welcome back to the Bobbycast.
The record you have coming out June 2nd, Blacktop, is that because that's what you did whenever you had to do something for a minute other than what you love to do?
Yeah. I mean, that was almost a 2-year stint. I worked at a motorcycle shop for a little bit and then went to the pavement company. And this is, Blacktop is really like a way of me paying tribute to like the industry and the people that gave me a chance to put food on the table for my wife and 3 kids during the absolute hardest time of my life. That's one reason that it's called Blacktop. But also, I started recording this while I was still working in the pavement company, and it's what got me back on the road full time. So between those two things, it just felt like Blacktop was the right name of the journey. There's nothing in the songs that has the lyric Blacktop in it, but it just felt like if I had to name this chapter of my life, that's what it would be.
I was looking at the track list, and you wrote most of the songs on here, but Wild as Her, Kelly Archer, Brett Tyler, Morgan Wallen all wrote that song. How did that get to you those years ago?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, right before I moved to Texas, I had gotten dropped, right, on my pub deal. And on my way out, essentially, I had one publishing company reach out to me that had interest. And we ended up working out a deal. And they know this now, but I was so scared to tell them I was moving to Texas that I was so afraid that they wouldn't work with me, they wouldn't sign the deal, that I just didn't tell them. And so for a whole year, every Monday I would fly in, and every Wednesday I would fly out.
Wow.
And I would tell them, hey, you know, I've got a family at home Thursday and Friday. I need to not ride. I'm probably not going to be available. And they would call me, and I'd be like freaking out. I'd be like, oh God, if I answer this and they ask me where I'm at and if I can come in, I'm done. They're going to know. Well, turns out they probably wouldn't have cared, but it's hard to know hindsight. They all know now. We all laugh about it. But before I went to work for the pavement company, before we knew that the world shutting down was going to be a thing for a while, that's what I was doing, like flying in and out, riding as much as I could. And Combustion is the name of the publishing company, and Wild as Her was a Combustion song. So I learned because my friend Brett Tyler wrote this song, and Brett writes at Combustion. I was the new guy at Combustion. And they just felt like my brand and what I did live matched up perfectly with this song. And that we, you know, if I don't know if you've heard the demo, but Morgan obviously is like one of the best singers in the format, if not the best. And I don't know. I think a lot of people just heard that and were like, oh, sounds like a Morgan song. I'm not going to do it. And I heard an opportunity to do it in the style of our band. Like, we had a live thing. And so we took a stab at it in the studio, and and it came out pretty special and sounding on brand with what we did and sounding like our song. And people have liked it. It's done pretty well for us.
The Bobby Cast. We'll be right back.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct-to-consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com. Tecovas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I want to say thanks for everybody who has helped with St. Jude. I mean, you guys are changing lives. You guys are saving lives. St. Jude has been leading the way to the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of cancer. And I'm talking about childhood cancer. Your support actually means that families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food. So the parents can focus on being a parent and helping their kid live. You know, I never had cancer, but I was in the hospital as a kid for a long time. And I just remember how difficult it was, how scary it was. And then I remember getting out and having to figure out how to pay the bill. I didn't have to pay it, but you know, somebody did. But St. Jude eliminates a lot of that. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in Hope. You'll get an awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. Join the doctors, the researchers. Hey, join me in this fight and visit musicgives.org. That's musicgives.org. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
This is the Bobby Cast.
Do you feel the need to move back to Nashville?
We thought about it. Need? No, I don't. I mean, I'm on the road most of the time anyways. And I have a lot of old friends here. And I've started to bring people out to Texas to write. And I've been writing a lot of my best stuff outside of Nashville anyways. And it's always here. Like, we have a piece of land in Fairview that we bought in 2017. That's like, if we ever need to go back, that's where we're going to go. But right now, it makes more sense. All of our band and crew is from Oklahoma, so they all live there, except me and Bo, our tour manager, live in Dallas. And it's just kind of like a family thing that it just would feel weird to, you know, do this with a different family at this point. So I think we're in Texas for the foreseeable future, and that's where we want to raise our kids. And maybe when they get a little older, if it bought us more time together, you know, if I could, like, go to the studio and then come home at 5 o'clock and see my family, I think that we would really look at that. But right now I'm just on the road so much that I don't think it would buy us much more time together. So we're in Texas for now.
What'd you do to celebrate when the song hit number one after all that? I mean, that's a lot. It's a lot for anybody, right? This is a business.
Yeah.
Anything creative, it doesn't matter what it is, because everybody wants to do it because it looks fun. It really, there's a lot of this not, and it's very hard. That being said, a lot of people go through crap. You went through a lot of crap. Then you hit. What'd you do?
Well, the first thing we did was we asked the venue. We were playing in Lubbock. So we were like, it's past the point of getting, you know, to the liquor store to buy some champagne. And it was looking like it was shaping up pretty good. And so we asked the venue if they could track us down a bottle of champagne. They did. And I did not feel comfortable, even with a lead. I mean, Morgan Wallen's in the two spot. Like, that's the artist of a generation, man. One of the best to ever do it. I'm not comfortable until midnight, and it's 100%. So I think my team was more, they were like, hey, congratulations. I'm like, don't say that till midnight. Like, it's not, I'm not comfortable letting my guard down. And midnight hit, and, you know, we're still in our van. We get to go to a bus soon, but we were playing in Lubbock and right by our van, and I jumped up on top of the van and, you know, opened the bottle of champagne, and we got to have this moment as a group that it's the same guys from the moment that we recorded the song to the time that it had a moment to the time that it went number one. It's been the same band and the same crew, and we just got to, like, I know these guys' wives, I know their kids, I know, like, it's a family, and it felt like a huge family win, and it was, like, super fitting that I got to be there with them, these people that have been on this journey from, you know, that Flatland Cavalry show that we opened up at Hurricane Harry's, where everybody was seated and socially distanced. And I remember giving the pep talk of, like, we will never be out hustled from this point on. Like, we have to build this thing. And to be there and to be standing there right next, like, not next to a tour bus, next to our van, and be like, we have the number one song in country music. It was such a powerful moment, because it was like, against all odds, like, the dude based out of Texas working at the pavement company has the number one song in country. I mean,
and the length of the and the amount of time it took to get there too.
Yeah,
because, you know, from March of 2022, I believe, I'm educatedly guessing, right? Was it like March or so?
Yeah,
it came out a single. To what are we in now? May of 2023. Most times, a song is given up on. Or, giving up on is not the word. You celebrate that it made 13, because you're not going to put another 7 weeks into it.
Right.
That also
is, well,
something that's not common.
You know what was really cool about it is we which at the time wasn't cool, because I didn't really know Parker McCollum all that well at the time. And he put out a song the same, like, put a song to radio the same day as Wild as Her. And I'm going, oh. Like, he got Most Added. He got all the things that I was hoping to get. And now we're really good friends. Like, we've played a lot of shows together. He's like big brother, and we paced with him the whole way. And I think that is a huge reason why they were like, oh, this thing's doing well, right? Like, Parker's going for his third number one, and he just got it, the week before us. And we just followed a guy that had a track record and a big fan base and was established. Our song was pacing with his. So I think that helped us kind of, you know, if ever there was a moment of like, do we keep going? I think that was enough to go, well, Parker's crushing it, and we're right there. Like, let's hang on. And the amount of time was like, the song had been out for a little bit, but it hadn't been at radio super long either. So it's kind of had two lives. Like, we released it independently, and it went gold before any record deal was done. And then we signed with Sony RCA, and they did they are some of the hardest workers. I never anticipated signing a major label deal and finding people that worked equally as hard as I did. And I've found that, like, there are killers in this organization, and they went to work and they doubled how big the song was. And now it's, you know, they worked at radio, and it was a hard fought battle to get to that one spot. And, I'm just super proud that I was telling them, look, even if we get to number two and that's where it dies, the fact that how it was done, like, fans demanded it to go to radio, really, because it was consuming huge, and people were screaming it on the other side of the world. We played in Australia, and people are screaming this song to the point that we just let them sing it. Like, it was amazing. The song has already done what it needed to do. I just wanted to know that the team that I had signed with was going to fight as hard as I was going to fight. And I saw that. And then I was like, you know what? Wherever it ends up is where it ends up. And thankfully, I like winning a lot more than not winning. Right. And getting to one is just super gratifying. But I was really pleased with how just everybody's work ethic.
Do you have the next single? Have you announced it yet? Do you know it? Is it a secret?
It's not a secret. I mean, I think we've got gut feelings, but, you know, the record comes out June 2nd, and our most recent single is definitely our top performing release that we've ever had, which is called Something's Gonna Kill Me. And I would love for that one to go to radio.
What do they wait on? Like, what are you waiting on for that to be official? Are they gonna let it all come out and look at consumption?
I think that's part of it. I mean, I think that these days, it's a little more calculated what you take to radio, it seems. Again, I am learning on the fly. I know nothing about the radio world. Like, this is our first stab at radio, and it worked out really well, but that doesn't mean I know much about it.
That's how it works for everybody, though.
Okay, great.
It goes really well first time. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, yeah. It's easiest from what I hear. So, no, but I think that's part of it is, like, they want to see how the fans like the song. But I think the other part of it was, like, we just had time because while the service still on the charts, it's not like we're going to throw another one at it. So now we're kind of in crunch time to figure out what are we going to do next. And it seems like Something's Going to Kill Me makes sense.
Sure.
It's doing well. It's on XM right now. It's performing well. It's streaming really well. Fans are singing it back to us live. Like, it's got all the indicators. But also, this record, I could not pick one. If I had to pick one, we have a lot of radio-worthy songs on the back half of this record that hasn't come out yet. And as a new artist, I think it's not like I can go have 8 singles off of the first record with 10 songs on it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we do need to be careful on how we pick, but I would be lying to you if I said I could predict what people are going to like.
Last question. Does your rate go up now, your guarantee, now that you have number one?
God, I hope so.
I mean, is that a... Because for me, mine would go up once I would sell comedy shows and do, like, you know, 1,500. You do that consistently. I never had a chart. Mine was always, my rate would go up or my guarantee would go up once I had been able to sustain ticket success. Mm. Now that you have a number one, that should be like an automatic. Let's turn it up a little bit.
I would hope so. But like you, I mean, we've been building tickets. Like, that's what
hard tickets, which are the hardest thing to do and also the most valuable.
Yep. So, you know, we can sell a few thousand tickets in Oklahoma and Texas and elsewhere too. I mean, our ticket sales have been really solid and always on the upward trajectory. And now it's to the point where it's like, you know, we're going on tour with Jason Aldean, and, like, the exposure was a no-brainer. But it was like, man, well, shoot, headlining shows, like, we can go make a great living doing that. Should we
You'll make less money. I'll say it. You'll make less money opening for Aldean than you would have doing your own shows.
Yes, but.
But there's currency also on exposure on a big, massive show.
It's like investment seasons and then, like,
absolutely,
reap the reward seasons, and you got to find a way to balance them. And I never want to be the guy that is just, like, stuck as an opening act. So you gotta pick and choose when you accept those things. But this was, we actually had turned down a tour prior that was great exposure, same pay. It just didn't align with the brand as well. And so we were like, you know what? In this particular situation, we feel like it's more valuable for our brand to go back to the clubs and just build our headline stuff. And then the Aldean tour came along, and it was like, this feels pretty on brand with what we've got going. And I feel like this is an accelerator. It became an investment season, right? And so I would guess that it's almost always based off of tickets. Like, doesn't matter if you have 10 number ones if you can't sell 300 tickets.
I don't know, though, man.
You think?
First of all, if you sell hard tickets already, that's the key. So it's almost like, you don't need a number one, because there are artists that tour that don't have number one songs.
Right.
That's guaranteed is massive because they can sell tickets, right?
True.
Hard tickets are the hardest thing to, if you have that data, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your rate is probably already defined by tickets, and that's awesome because you've created that. Well, look, dude, that's awesome. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you, brother.
That, have you met Willie since?
No, I'm hoping for the day, man. Just to be able to say thank you. Like, I doubt he would even remember that. That's probably happened a million times to him. But to me, it happened once. And it changed the course of my life. Like, it was the thing that got me to go try my hand at writing songs. And yeah, hopefully someday I can cross paths with him, just shake his hand and tell him thank you.
Mine was the Wiggles when they called me up. Remember that, Mike?
I do remember that. You were so excited.
I knew ever since.
Oh, my God.
Ever since, I was like, this is for me.
This is for me. That's awesome.
Congratulations, man. And
thank you.
I know you're heading home, but have safe trip home. And looking forward to seeing you again.
Dude, heck yeah.
All right. There he is.
Thank you.
Corey Kent.
Love this episode of the Bobbycast? Subscribe on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This is Amy Brown from 4 Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. Are you looking to build this year? If so, there is no better time than right now to start planning and to get your spot on the construction schedule. If you need a garage, a stall barn, a storage for vehicles, RV, boat, collectibles, or even a shop for your farm, hobbies, or car restoration projects, visit MortonBuildings.com and start your construction process. With superior materials, craftsmanship, best-in-class warranty, Morton Buildings are made to last for generations. At Morton, the difference is in the details. From their cutting-edge innovations to their craftsmen in the field, they are dedicated to surpassing expectations. Their legacy of excellence spans more than 120 years, and Morton Buildings is 100% employee-owned with more than 250,000 satisfied customers. That means they're the industry leader you can trust. When you choose Morton, you'll experience quality at every step of the building process, starting before the walls even go up. Visit MortonBuildings.com to get started today.